This is Ebony.
And this is Zalma.
And we are so glad to be back for this second episode. We have some pretty interesting things to talk about. There's been a lot of drama going on. And so for this week, we'll talk about the Fyre Festival documentaries. Dun, dun, dun. So I guess this is the first set of a couple of spoiler alerts that we'll do throughout the episode. So if you have not seen either documentary and you want to watch them before you listen to the episode and listen to our opinions, this is just a alert to let you know that that's what we'll be talking about. So now let's jump into the shout-out segment.
Yeah, so our first shout-out goes to... So this year, I was really excited about the Oscar nominations just because there was actually a lot of actors, actresses, and movies that I was interested in. Plus, with the whole, like, Oscars too white, they made it seem like they're going to try to diversify. Mm-hmm. So January 22nd, they released the nominations for the Oscars, which will be happening next month. And Yalitza Aparicio, she is nominated for an Oscar for Best Actress for her film in Roma. And she's the first indigenous Mexican woman ever to be nominated. And I think only the second Mexican actress to be nominated for lead actress. I think the first was Salma Hayek, which I really appreciated that she gave her a shout out and said that she was the first Mexican actress to be nominated, and she hopes that Yalitza wins because Salma Hayek, I don't think, won. And what's, you know, shout out to her just because in Mexico, usually they portray like the white looking actresses. Mm-hmm. And just like in the United States, there's a lot of racial tension. In Mexico, there's a lot of tension between indigenous and non-indigenous populations. And so she, you know, she looks darker. She doesn't have the blue eyes. She can't pass for white. And so that's not what typically you see in movies. And so for her to not only be so well received by the Mexican public, but also by the American public, I think is awesome. And also for her to be nominated for an Oscar in her first performance ever. I think she was studying to be a teacher and then just tried out for this role. So if you haven't seen Roma, I highly suggest it, especially if you're trying to learn Spanish because they have subtitles. Mm-hmm. And it's a great movie, and it's the first film for Netflix to be nominated for an Oscar. So shout out to Netflix for giving them the opportunity. Shout out to Yalitza Aparicio for her first nomination. And hopefully, you know, I mean, she's going against Lady Gaga, so which is also another unusual nomination. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think I saw that. Did you see Lady Gaga's?
The movie? Yeah, it was great. I think she was great.
Yeah.
I think she deserves the nomination.
Okay. I want to see it.
You should.
I wonder if it's on
really
Apple.
Good.
Or if it's on iTunes yet.
It's really good. Okay. And then our second shout-out goes to Senator Kamala Harris. I don't know if you know her. If you saw her, you probably would recognize her because she's been very outspoken. So she's a senator from California, and she announced that she is running for president in 2020.
Yeah.
She already has her campaign website up.
She raised a ton of money.
Yeah, that made news. And she, you know, she released the news just recently, within a week. So... You know, she wouldn't be the first woman of color running because, you know, I think we talked that they were going to make a movie about it in one of our previous episodes about, I think, the first woman.
Shirley Chisholm?
Yeah. So she's just, you know, running for to be the Democratic nominee.
Did we do that?
Yeah, I think we brought it up in one of our episodes as, like, a shout-out or something.
Okay.
I'm trying not to be such a cynic to be like, I don't know, but... You know what? I just appreciate that she's saying we need to have... I could be someone who can speak for the people.
Yeah.
And I appreciate what she does for a senator.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I'm going to be looking out for the other nominees.
Low-key, I feel like because of Trump and because of all the anti-Trump sentiment on the left, we're going to have so many candidates throwing their hats in the ring.
I know. It's going to
It
hard.
It's going to be so divided. And
a lot of diverse ones, too.
And so it's going to make it hard. And then we're going to... I mean, this is my... you know, I tend to be a pretty, like, positive thinker, but I feel like if we're just realistic about this, if all of these people, they're going to run on different platforms, right? And so they're going to divide the left. And then we're going to be so segmented that we end up losing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happened last time. Right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, and then you have a lot of people that are going to vote independent or libertarian.
Or not. You know? Well, I think people will... I think we won't see people not voting like we did before, but I do think that they're going to try to vote for a different party.
Just to go against the grain.
But Republicans will still vote Republican.
Yeah, because they're thinking about strategy. They don't actually... So, it's like, I don't know. There's so many critiques. And it's just, it all boils down to the two-party system. It sucks.
Yeah, it is.
It sucks.
But
yeah, I mean, I'm happy that she is joining the race.
Yeah.
I like her. And
me too.
Yeah. I mean, fingers crossed, right?
Yeah, I mean,
fingers
shout out to her for trying. I think it's great. Not trying to, like, be condescending and be like, you know, you get an A+ for trying, but because she is so critical about what needs to change, and she's doing the ultimate thing, which is running for president.
Yeah, and so we're going to, I mean, over the next few months, we're going to really see who all the...
Yeah, because you have to start saying, this much ahead, you have to start campaigning. Yeah, so I saw on the website that she's looking for people who want to help in her campaign. So if you guys out there are interested in, you know, being part of a movement or being part of a campaign for a woman of color, then I suggest you go to her website and see how you can help, because she definitely needs people on the streets everywhere. So, you know, go to her website and look her up and apply. And I'm sure you can volunteer. And so if you're wanting to spend your time doing something, that would be a great thing to do.
Yeah. Okay. So now we will dive into our In the Know segment. Extra, extra, read all about it. Now for our In the Know segment.
Yes, and so our first In the Know topic I wanted to bring up is, I don't know if you guys were aware, but the Supreme Court revived the transgender ban on military service. And so I had to look this up because I had to be really clear about what it means. And so the Supreme Court on Tuesday granted the Trump administration's request to allow it to bar most transgender people from serving in the military while cases challenging the policy make their way to court. So they didn't make a ruling on it. They basically just said, we're going to keep his ban in place while the challenges make its way up the ranks in court, because there's like a hierarchy of the way that you can challenge things. And so some people were saying this is good because this means that Trump just can't like skip all the or skip the way it's supposed to move up in court and just go to the Supreme Court. But the bad part is, in the meanwhile, transgender people are being discriminated against. So the administration's policy reversed a 2016 decision by the Obama administration, of course, to open the military to transgender service members. It generally prohibits transgender people from military service, but makes exceptions for those already serving openly and those willing to serve, quote unquote, in their biological sex. So that's bad because it's basically saying, okay, fine, we'll make exceptions if you revert back to the gender that you're saying that you don't feel that is the correct gender for you.
And then that makes you no longer trans.
Not being trans. And of course, the vote to lift these two injunctions blocking the policy was 5-4 with the Supreme Court's 5 conservative members in the majority, which is why it was so important to not have Brett Kavanaugh be the Supreme Court, because for these exact situations where now you have a conservative majority and it's just one person that makes this difference. And so this transgender policy announced on Twitter, of course, by the president and refined by Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is complicated, and there is some dispute about its precise effect and timing. Broadly speaking, transgender people already serving openly may continue to serve once the injunctions are lifted, but those who seek to transition or serve openly after that, happens, risk discharge. So the few that are already in can apparently keep their jobs, I guess. But if they're in the middle of transitioning, they can't keep their jobs if they continue the transition, and then they can't have new recruits.
Yeah. And so, but they can continue, the ones who are already enlisted can continue to work once the injunctions are lifted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like right now, or in the meantime, you're kind of I mean, I wonder if they're technically unemployed, or it's like you're employed, you're just not working.
Yeah, I think that's why they're saying like it's complicated and they don't know about its precise effect and timing. And I'm sure they're gonna, they should sue the government.
And he has no like, for what?
I know, there's no, there is.
What's the reason?
Because usually the whole transgender thing is like, protect the children, perverts can go into the bathrooms, and transgender people confuse kids, and we don't want to pay for insurance. But they're not really citing why it is better for the the military to not have transgender people, other than just flat out discrimination.
I wonder who it is that they're concerned about.
I have, you know,
because I wonder, like, for people who are cisgender and who are in the military, I wonder what their sentiments are. Like, maybe we should do some kind of survey or something like that, because I wonder if, what if the complaints are coming from in-house?
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe, I mean, hopefully this isn't the case, but if there are cisgender people that are saying, no, we don't want to serve alongside trans folks, then, you know, maybe that could be something. Because it's just, I mean, not that I would put it past, you know, the current administration to put their nose in places that it doesn't belong, but it just seems weird to be so invested and concerned about that. Like, for what?
I think they just want to win. They don't have wins that they promise they're really, like, super right base, and this would be a huge win.
But who's it benefiting? The right? So the right is objecting to, or anti?
I think they're just, I think they're anti, I think, well, when I was reading this, when I was, when I was reading this, like, a year ago when he first, or a year or 2 years ago when he first brought this up, what Trump said, claimed was his reason, is that if you're in the military and you're transgender and you're transitioning, then the military pays for it, is what he's saying.
So it was like a money thing.
And he's saying, and he's, but then a lot of people came back and were like, one, like, a lot of insurances don't cover this. Two, the people who are actually, you know, the number of people who are actually getting these trans, you know, these services is so, so small. And three, like, you fucking want $5.7 billion for a wall.
What?
So if we're worried about budgets.
You're fiscally conservative.
I know.
You are when it interests you.
So that's why it's like the whole ban on immigration, the ban on from certain countries in Africa, a ban on, like, people from El Salvador. It just, it's always, there's always a sense of prejudice and discrimination.
Yeah.
And I think this is just another instance where he can say,
he
and can, the moral people,
put his foot down. Every chance he gets, he's like, oh, what? I could keep people out?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of ignorance about gender identity versus sexual orientation. So I think maybe a lot of his conservative base are just like, oh, that's gay.
Yeah.
It's just like being gay.
Yeah, so that was kind of what I was trying to tap and asking what people that are all, like, cisgender people are saying. Because if there is a, you know, a feeling of like, oh, you know, there's some, like, discomfort around this. Because it was the whole, the same, like, don't ask, don't tell kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And so there was this sense that, you know, military folks are not okay with people who may not be heterosexual serving in the military.
Yeah. I think that that's what, that's what it is. So,
just a lack of,
so, yeah, we'll follow this story, too, to see, because it still has to make its way up federal court, but Trump definitely sees this as a win for him, and it's just really sad, because it, and even if it's, people are like, oh, well, how many trans people are actually in the military? It's like, well, what this is saying, the bigger picture this is saying, is that the government has the ability to say, if you don't fit this, then we can tell you what you can and can't do. And that's scary for all minorities, not just transgender.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, those are your rights.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you, I mean, if we're thinking about how much we praise the military and how, especially conservatives, put them on this pedestal, you know, where it's like the right to quote unquote defend and protect your country.
Yeah.
You know, and defend your flag and your anthem should be a right that is can be exercised by everybody.
Yeah, and what my military friends always tell me, because, you know, race is such a huge topic for me, is in the military, there's no black or white. Yeah. There's just green.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, there shouldn't be any, because they're like, there's no segregation. We're all brothers together and sisters. Yeah. And so it's like, well, this is definitely saying there is a difference.
Yeah, so there should also be no cis versus trans or gay versus straight or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like,
So definitely another quote unquote win for Trump, and another fucked up way that he's trying to, one, not only undo something President Obama has done, but just always attack some sort of minority
he's
group.
He's grappling at straws. He's trying to find ways to, like, reassure his base.
That's
he's like, oh my God, what can I do to get them to vote for me?
Yeah, he's like, I'm not doing well with this shutdown. Yeah. I'm not doing well with the wall, and so this is something that I can do.
Who can I keep out? What will make the whites feel more? What will make them feel safer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the next story is a story that is, it's recent. I don't know if it got too much attention in the national headline because of the government shutdown. Yeah. But in Florida, there is a shooting by 21-year-old Zephan Xavier, or Xavier. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce his last name, but he is a white male who shot and killed at least 5 people when he opened fire this week in a bank in Florida at approximately 12:36 p.m. Police and the sheriff deputies responded to a bank branch, a SunTrust bank branch, after the man himself called police dispatcher and said he had fired shots in the bank. The responding law enforcement agents began negotiating with the barricaded shooter, trying to get him to surrender. A SWAT team entered the building and continued to negotiate with the gunman until he eventually surrendered. And apparently he was a former corrections officer. But I think that what a lot of people are highlighting from this story, one is, again, you know, the whole, like, oh, Mexicans are, we have to keep the Mexicans out because all these gang members are coming and killing our Americans. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, here you, yet again, you have another homebred American who, you know, killed people. And, you know, they talk about toxic masculinity because it's another male. Yeah. And I believe that the victims were all female.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think to me the most important thing is that they negotiate, he's alive, and he not only, like, robbed a bank, or was, like, I don't know if he was robbing the bank, or
he's probably just upset,
but that's like a
throwing a tantrum,
you,
like our president.
And they negotiated outside, and then once they went inside, they negotiated inside. They didn't, like, SWAT teams have come in and accidentally injured children. Like, when they enter black people's houses. Yeah.
Killed them. Yeah. God forbid anything happened to a precious hair on this
man's and head. So that's what's so frustrating. And then trying, when I see on social media people pointing out, like, oh, this is, you know, another instance where a white person was spared and treated very well, which shows that law enforcement is capable and has the skills to be able to not just shoot when, shoot on impulse.
Yeah. Or when someone is armed and dangerous, right? Yeah. Because that's the impression that we've been given, is that law enforcement shoot to kill when they are in fear of their life and their safety. But for whatever reason, when the killer is, or murderer is white, they are not afraid for their safety.
Especially in Florida, where it's like a stand your ground state, where it's like a, I can shoot you if I have even the slightest itch of anything. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, even in this state, you have a case where this man who's told you he shot people who you know is armed and dangerous, who is still in there. You still give him the benefit of the doubt of being like, we're going to try to save his life.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's just, it's very telling about a lot of things that we constantly keep talking about in this podcast, which is that in this country, law enforcement treats people of color differently than they do treat white people. And this is just another example. And you have to be very intentional about not seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah. a shame.
Yeah.
Okay. So our next in the know topic is about Cardi B. So Cardi B has been in the headlines this week in relation to the Me Too movement. So she had a new music video come out called Twerk, and she was explaining, or asked to explain, how the video and what's going on in the video empowers women in the era of the Me Too movement. So Stephanie Hamill tweeted Cardi on January 22nd and said, "In the era of hashtag Me Too, how exactly does this empower women? Leftists, Cardi B, feel free to chime in. Thanks." And so Cardi tweeted back, "It says to women that I can wear and not wear whatever I want, do whatever I want, and that no still means no. So Stephanie, chime in. If I twerk and be half naked, does that mean I deserve to get raped and molested? I want to know what a conservative woman like you thinks." So I think that, oh, and then also in response again, Stephanie said, "I agree, no means no, no matter what. But this video and others like this sexually objectify women. I think this hurts all women and the cause. We're not sex objects. Clearly, we see things differently. Maybe I'm just a hater because I can't twerk. Come on my show, debate me." So I thought that little snide comment at the end was petty.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that it's interesting that Cardi is being, is a rapper that's being chastised about her music video. And I don't know if Cardi had ever necessarily stood up and said, you know, I want to be a part of this Me Too movement. I want to be mm-hmm. a voice for the Me Too movement. So I think that it's interesting that they are highlighting her video and claiming that it, you know, that it's destructive. Cardi went on to say that essentially that the Me Too movement is hypocritical. And she's demanding for people to keep it real and support all women or admit their biases. So she says, you know, "There's a lot of video vixens and urban models that get bribed by men, photographers, directors. Like, if you want to be the lead girl in his video or if you want to be in this magazine, you need to do this and that. Most likely something sexual. And when the women speak up, nobody cares. Since they are vixens or models for urban, they are considered a hoe. But these are the same women you love watching and be making these music videos. A lot of women out here always talking about equality and feminism, but you want to have a standard on what you should stand for. You should stand and respect all types of women. Lawyers, doctors, video vixens, strippers, stand for all. You are no better than anybody else. People say, why do you always got to say you used to be a stripper? We get it." And she says, "Because y'all don't respect me because of it. And y'all gonna respect strippers from now on." So I think that Cardi, that, you know, the stance that she's taking is really admirable, because I think it's, you know, it's true that I haven't heard any musicians, artists, rappers, whatever, come forward and talk about their experiences in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though we do, you know, if you listen to hip hop, if you listen to rap, you see how women are degraded constantly. Mm-hmm. And so you know that there is an assumption that, you know, women are there for their, like, sexual prowess or whatever. And I think that one of the main things that I like about Cardi's message is that she's saying, yes, we can do both. You know, so I can, because I thought that was essentially what the feminist, you know, third wave feminism was essentially about. You know, it's like, I'm in power and I'm in charge of my own body. I am in charge of making decisions about my body. You know, the whole sexual liberation movement, it's like that was kind of lost, it seems, between third and this Me Too movement is kind of, some people have loosely called it fourth wave. And I think that there was something lost between third and fourth, where now we're back, we've kind of rest, and now we're on blaming the victim. So it's like, oh, okay, this is what she's saying, is that, you know, twerking does a disservice to all women. And it's like, why is that? Oh, because they're doing something that is sexualized. They deserve, you know, they deserve to be mistreated, or they deserve to be whatever, like, you know, hypersexualized or whatever. And I think that we have come so far and made so many strides in terms of, you know, separating women and the way that they choose to dress or the way that they choose to dance or the way that they choose to carry themselves in general from, you know, behaviors that they deserve. There are things that they deserve to be done to them based on the way that they're carrying themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, she just had a recent music video for one of her songs. I forgot the name of the song. But in the song, she's like, there's like poles, and then people are like pole dancing. Mm-hmm. But one of the scenes, she has, she's actually breastfeeding her daughter, Culture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I just feel like it's so frustrating when people like this, like Stephanie Hamill goes and she's like, oh, your new video, twerk. Like, it's sexualizing people. When it's like, did you not see that other video where she fucking is like dancing and breastfeeding her child? Which is like what I think feminist women, especially white women, are all about, like, oh, like this is non-sexualizing. So in that moment she was like, yes, my boobs can be sexy, but in this scene my boob is feeding my child. Yeah. And when I saw that as someone who breastfeeds, I'm like, I am all for this. Yeah. Because that's probably like, she probably did have to stop in the middle of her shoot to feed her child. Yeah. And she just chose to put that in her video, and you know, she was like all dressed up, and it was just like, yes, that just shows you, like, yeah, there are lots of times when I, you know, I'm out and I have to like go to a room. I was just at the dentist and I had to go to a room and breastfeed my child. Yeah. And then go about my day, and she was basically highlighting that. And so I just feel like it's just really frustrating to be like, yeah, look at her other work in her other videos and tell me if she's only promoting the sexualized object of women. Mm-hmm. Because in that video, she was doing the exact opposite. Yeah. And so I don't know. I think I don't know. That kind of rubs me the wrong way. And I'm really glad that Cardi is speaking up. And yeah. I feel like it's they're just kind of being unfair by choosing her and being like, you speak for all women. Yeah. And it's like, she's doing a lot more than a lot of other people are. Yeah. Even like non-women of color. Yeah. Like a lot of white models or all those white Victoria's Secret models, like, why don't you know, get Gigi Hadid or Kendall Jenner, like, why don't you just call them out and say that they're sexualizing women and only call out Cardi?
Yeah, I mean, if they tried to do the same thing with Beyonce, you know, like, how can Beyonce be a feminist when she dresses like this? And it's so sad, because I thought we had made so much progress, you know, and I think that one thing that Cardi B and even Beyonce, like, Beyonce wasn't necessarily focused on the music industry, but I think that one thing that they are highlighting is that it's complex. There's nuance. Yeah. Like, it's not just a black or white thing. It's not, oh, women have to be covered from head to toe in order to get respect or to be treated like fucking human beings. It's like, no, we're complex creatures. The way that we need to think about feminism and women's rights is also complex.
Yeah, and if we don't want, like, Roger to tell us how to dress, I definitely don't want Susie to tell me how to dress. Yeah, like, no, there's no policing, period.
Yeah, there shouldn't be on either side. Yeah, so poor.
Well, good for Cardi for, you know, these clapbacks I'm for.
same. Okay, so last on the docket, BB Rexa?
I think that's how I've been saying it.
Okay. She has also kind of been in the headlines because she got nominated for a Grammy, and she's saying that designers have refused to dress her because she's a size 8. So on February 10th, she will attend her first Grammys as a nominee for the Best New Artist and Best Country Duo / Group Performance. It's a big night for her, obviously, and one that has come with an unexpected complication. So she has gone to designers, and I guess she's apparently a size 6/8, which, I mean, I feel like is normal size, regular size.
I think that's the average American size is an 8.
Yeah, but she's been considered too big for them. So couture dresses, you know, these brands that typically dress people, which is, like, so crazy, because who are these, you know, all of these, like, black artists or these women that are who curvy, dresses, like, them? Who are they going to?
Yeah.
If this is a thing. But, so she says, if a size 6/8 is too big, then I don't know what to tell you. then I don't want to wear your fucking dresses, because that's crazy, because you're saying that all the women in the world that are a size 8 and up are not beautiful and they cannot wear your dresses. So to all the people who said I'm thick and I can't wear your dresses, fuck you, I don't want to wear your fucking dresses. So I just think it's so interesting, because I was like, she can't be the, I mean, if somebody's telling, is she white?
I don't know. I was about to look her up.
If somebody's telling her this, then this has to be kind of a general message, or maybe an understood message in the industry. Because she's certainly, I mean, she's like my size. She's regular size. But then she's not plus size. But if they're treating her like she's plus size, then how are they treating the plus size?
Yeah.
The plus size people that they have to dress. Like, this is just, it's crazy. We are literally moving backwards.
Yeah. Well, and then for them to not, I thought designers made clothes. Couldn't they make?
Yeah, so it's like, oh no, I just don't want to make
clothes. So she's Albania.
Okay. So they're just like, I don't want to make clothes for your size. Like, I
don't. Yeah, that's what they're basically saying. Style you.
Because maybe they think that, like, oh, their dresses should only be, they only look good, or they look best on a size 2.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with her. I think that's crazy. I mean, and that really does send a terrible message.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I was seeing, so if you shop at American Eagle and, you know, you see American Eagle ads, like, they're super progressive. Like, it's, like, super diverse, you know? Mm-hmm. They're making a point to show women in all shades, all sizes, different hairstyles, you know, tattoos, like, you know, just a bunch of different things. And it's like, I thought that was the direction that we were going in.
Yeah.
I remember they had this whole campaign, and I think they even, I saw recently a picture of a bridal store that had a mannequin in a wheelchair. Yeah, and it's like, these are things that we don't even think about as being necessary, you know, or important. And for these designers to be sending us backwards is the designers, just the fashion industry, the music industry, it seems like it's going back in the direction of being problematic.
Well, I hope someone reaches out to her and tells, you know, and that when the Grammys come, she can,
yeah, she better slay somebody,
yeah,
better
when they ask her, like, yeah, when they ask her, like, so who are you wearing or whatever, she makes a point to be like, this designer, and then people really like support that person. And I hope she tells us who it was that told her that she's too big, because
I hope a designer hits her up and says, I'll dress you.
I think so.
I'm gonna make you like the most beautiful dress you've ever,
I think so. I have faith that there are people who
yeah.
But like, good for her, for like, because I know people, all of us have encountered, you know, periods where, or places where you're just like, there's no way that fits a real person.
Yeah. It's hilarious that she said to everybody that told me I was thick, F you, because I thought thick was all the rage. But maybe it isn't anymore. Okay, so that wraps up our In the Know segment, and now we'll jump into our What's Being Slept On segment.
So I strongly suggest that you wake the fuck up.
Okay, so now for our What's Being Slept On segment. So we are discussing the Fyre Festival.
Yes.
Well, specifically the Fyre Festival documentaries.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are two. There's one on Hulu and there's one on Netflix. I guess they were put together by different people
something
like that.
Yeah, it was like competing.
Yeah. So if you have not seen it, I definitely encourage you to listen to it. You don't necessarily have to listen to it before you listen to or you don't have to necessarily watch it before you listen to this, but even after you listen to us, it's like a really interesting,
because
like,
this festival thing happened a while ago, so there's no spoilers here.
Yeah.
Like, you would have read about it.
Yeah, and so if you just haven't come across it, then you just haven't come across it, but I would say look it up, because it's really entertaining
good.
To watch. Yeah, it's like, what? I can't believe that
happened. Even, I think, like, we even, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast. We definitely talked about it to each other.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know the depth of how fucked up it was until I saw the documentary. And so I definitely would suggest it. Even if you don't know, like, you it's worth it. Even if you're like, I don't care about music festivals, this is much deeper than
that. Yeah, this is way deep. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of background. So in case you haven't heard of it, you can have some context. So it was a music festival, and it was scheduled to take place on the Bahamian island of Great Eczema over 2 weekends in April and May. So April and May 2017. And it was to be put on by Billy McFarland and the Fire Media app. So Billy founded this Fire Media app along with Ja Rule. And this festival was supposed to kind of be like the promo for it. So they were at the festival. They were going to really push this this app. And the app was supposed to be accessible to anybody. And it was going to allow people to book major artists. So kind of like, say, like Tinder, but for musicians. Like, you could, you know, pick somebody, pick the date that you wanted to book them for in the event, and then the artist, or I guess their management or whoever, their team would approve it. And then you would pay them through the app and all of that stuff. So the app sounded like a really cool idea. Mm-hmm. Too bad that they planned this festival and now it's going to not happen, I guess. But yeah, so there were supposed to be 400 plus attendees, and I'm going to just read a little bit about it, and then we'll dive into the actual documentary. So, organized by Fire Media founder Billy McFarland and rapper Ja Rule as a luxury music festival to promote the Fire Music Booking app, the event was promoted on Instagram by social media influencers, including socialite and model Kendall Jenner, model Bella Hadid, model and actress Emily Rada,
yeah, I can never pronounce her name,
and other media personalities, many of whom did not initially disclose they had been paid to do so. So they were asked to post ads on Instagram, mm-hmm. Saying that this festival was going on and essentially that they endorsed it. Mm-hmm. But at this time, so a lot of you may know, if you have an Instagram or if you follow any celebrities or any influencers, that now they're required to put, you know, ad in their bio.
Yeah, hashtag ad.
If it's, yeah, hashtag ad, if it's a paid promotion. Before, they weren't required to do that, so they could just post something as though, you know, they were actually consumers, like they had mm-hmm. purchased this product and they were endorsing it, even though they were getting paid by the company to do so. So during the Fire Festival's inaugural weekend, the event experienced problems related to security, food, accommodation, and artist relations. Eventually, the festival was indefinitely postponed after some attendees had arrived, finding tents and prepackaged sandwiches instead of luxury villas and gourmet meals they had been promised when they paid thousands of dollars for admission. So the cost to attend this, there was a lot of variation in the cost, because some people were like paying more for like fancier villas or certain packages and stuff like that. But generally, it looked like the tickets were about $2,500 up to like $250,000.
Yeah.
Like, there was just hella variation, and the prices were changing over time. Like, the founder, the Billy McFarland guy, he would change the prices depending on how much money he needed
to fund.
Yeah. Yeah. So the two documentaries about the events of the festival were released this year. Hulu released the original documentary called Fire Fraud on January 14th. And then on January 18th, Netflix released Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. I'm trying to see if I can find out how much money, So apparently Ja Rule posted a note on Twitter that said, "It was not a scam and this is not my fault." Fire Festival posted a statement on their website. Fire Festival set out to provide a once-in-a-lifetime musical experience on the islands of the Eczemas. Due to circumstances out of our control, the physical infrastructure was not in place on time, and we were unable to fulfill on the vision safely and enjoyably for our guests. At this time, we are working tirelessly to get flights scheduled and get everyone off of great... Oh, so this was actually posted. Sorry. So this was posted during... Like, this was posted when people had already arrived.
Yeah, and we're like tweeting, like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially because it was supposed to happen over 2 weekends. And so it's like, if people that get there the first weekend are tweeting that this is terrible, don't come, people are not going to come the second weekend.
Yeah.
So this was kind of like the Fyre Festival trying to do damage control and tweeting out this letter or posting it on Instagram or whatever. So at this time, we are working tirelessly to get flights scheduled and get everyone off of Great Eczema and home safely as quickly as we can. We ask that guests currently on island do not make their own arrangements to get to the airport as we are coordinating those plans. We are working to place everyone on complimentary charters back to Miami today. This process has commenced and the safety and comfort of our guests is our top priority. The festival is being postponed until we can further access if and when we are able to create the high quality experience we envisioned. We ask for everyone's patience and cooperation during this difficult time as we work so quickly, as we work as quickly and safely as we can to remedy this unforeseeable situation. Unforeseeable. They are being very careful with their words. Yeah. We will continue to provide regular updates via email to our guests and via official social media channels as they become available. So, as a result of the festival, McFarlane and Ja Rule are subject of a $100 million lawsuit in the state of California. It was filed on behalf of plaintiff Daniel Jung by an entertainment lawyer who is seeking a class action status for a lawsuit with more than 150 plaintiffs. So, also McFarlane, I think he's currently in jail, mm-hmm. right? Serving a 6-year sentence. He did a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about. There was a criminal investigation underway because he committed a lot of wire fraud.
Lying about how much money they had to investors.
Yeah. So he would tell investors, you know, he got like millions of dollars from people to invest mm-hmm. in this, you know, this festival. And he convinced these investors to give him these millions of dollars by claiming that they had made a lot of money mm-hmm. when they hadn't.
Yeah.
So he forged documents and all of these things. He claimed to have done wire transfers that he actually didn't do. Mm-hmm. He just really stole tons mm-hmm. and tons of dollars.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people I had seen were saying that, you know, this wasn't fraud, it was just bad business, or it was, you know, a mistake, it was an honest mistake, it was poor planning, etc., etc., etc. Giving this guy, like, all types of loopholes and benefits of the doubt.
Yeah.
And so we'll get into talking about our perspectives, but I guess one thing that I want to ask, Selma, is, like, who in this situation did you feel bad for?
I watched the Netflix documentary. Ugh, it's fucked up, but I did not feel bad for the people who paid to go to this festival. Because I was just kind of like, I don't know. I didn't feel as bad for them. But because it's like, you know, they were saying that the day before they were DMing the place and they were like, you're not telling me what airport to go to. It's really unclear what I should do. And I'm just kind of like, if a week before I didn't hear, I would be like, I don't know if I'm going to, I don't know. I just feel like there should have been more homework done on their part. I felt really bad for the people in the Bahamas. Mm. There's especially one woman who, she was in charge of like the food. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that they promised them, you know, this is going to be a festival that happens, you know, every year for 5 years, we can do a contract with you. So if you really show us that, you know, you do a really good job and we like you, then we'll keep this contract. And then you have 5 years of just like work guaranteed. And it's by Americans. And so there's this whole like, oh, Americans are going to come in and spend a lot of money. And a lot of people from the Bahamas were talking about how, you know, one of the main revenues streams is tourism. Mm-hmm. And so she was talking about how basically she used all her, you know, she basically did a lot of stuff for free with mm-hmm. the assumption that she would get paid eventually.
Yeah.
And then of course, once everything went down, there was no money to actually pay her. So she said that she had to pay all her workers out of pocket from her savings.
Yeah.
And so I felt sorry for her. I also felt sorry for the day laborers mm-hmm. who were promised that they would be paid after they helped them set up the festival. And of course, once they realized there was no money, they didn't get paid. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of think that, yeah, the Americans are having this class action suit against Ja Rule and Billy, but what about the people in the Bahamas? Like, did people go back and say, like, okay, we're going to rectify this? And I was like, no. And so I saw that as, like, huge, again, exploitation by Americans on these people in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. However, I did read somewhere that there was, like, a GoFundMe or something for her to be able to, like, pay her back. So that made me feel like there was some good that came out of her. But she was, like, in tears. She was saying, like, I don't even talk about this because this is so painful. And I just couldn't imagine the frustration of her being like, there's no way I'm ever going to get money for this. So that's who I felt bad for. I felt bad for the Bahamians.
Yeah.
Not so much for the Americans because, I mean, yeah, it sucks that they got ripped off. And this Billy character is definitely a con artist.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're attempting to get their money back.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I similarly, I mean, so I actually felt pretty bad for not everybody. I didn't feel bad for the people that were putting it together. To a certain extent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the people that he said, the people at the end that were saying that, like, he spent, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars on their credit card.
Yeah, and their credit cards were maxed out. What? Yeah, I thought that was
like,
terrible.
Like, $250,000 on
in
your credit?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was terrible.
Yeah. So, I pretty much felt bad for everybody involved that had been misled and sucked into this guy's, like, you know, because like you said, he's a con artist. And I think it was on the Netflix one where there was a woman that was, I think she might have been a psychologist or something like that. And she was defining what a con artist was. And she was just saying how manipulative they are, how charismatic, and like how they, I mean, they just use all types of trickery and like they can really get in your head and make you feel like, you know, really hopeful. And just, yeah, I mean, so I felt bad for the... I did feel bad for all the kids, right? Because it's like, I think that we're going to see in the next couple decades how influential and how detrimental social media can be.
Yeah.
Right? So we talk about FOMO and like this fear of missing out as being this funny thing, the hashtag or whatever. But apparently there's a lot of anxiety tied to it.
Yeah.
You know? And a lot of kids, they feel this like, they can, like, sink into, like, this depression when they see all these people look like they're living their lives and they themselves aren't really doing anything. So when they see something that they feel will, I don't know, increase their popularity or whatever, they're drawn to it and they feel like, oh, yeah, let me do it. And so, yeah, granted, I feel like these are kids that are, you know, like everybody was saying, they have a lot of money. Like, if you have money to spend $25,000 to go to a festival, you have money. There are people that are like, oh, we spent our whole savings on these tickets.
Yeah.
Like, just like ridiculousness, you know? And so I feel bad for them being out there stranded. And then I feel bad for, the caterer and the day laborers who, they were saying that he just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, like a lot of them did.
Yeah, so like he left the festival, the country. He told them that they would be paid after the festival and he just left.
Yeah.
And so, so they did do a GoFundMe. Apparently somebody on Twitter did a GoFundMe for this woman and it made like more than $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to my friend and she was saying not only did they get paid, but they also got overpaid, you know, ultimately.
Well, interest.
In the end. Yeah, that's true.
I would count that as interest. Yeah.
I think I feel bad for everybody but him.
Yeah.
Because he, I think, knew what he was doing. I don't know that he knew it was going to turn out this bad. I think he thought he would slap something together and, you know, all these festivals have their, you know, their issues. So it'll have a few issues, it'll have a few quirks, but we'll fix it next year kind of thing. And there was no, like, you know how they tell you in high school, prior planning prevents poor performance. And he did not plan ahead. You cannot procrastinate and throw it together. Like, there are certain things that you can procrastinate on, right? Things that are only going to have... something where the negative consequences only impact you.
Yeah.
But if you're putting all of these people who... they didn't volunteer to go down with you. Like, that's unfair. You don't get to procrastinate and slap something together, take millions of dollars from people, and then just say, oh, my bad. Like, no, you got to do better than that.
I think that also reflects how he's probably lived his whole life.
Yeah.
Where he's been able to just, like, live his life in a way where things worked out mm-hmm. for him because other people made them work
yeah.
out.
Yeah, getting by, what do they say, getting by the skin of his teeth or something uh-huh. like that? And he, because they were also talking about the other business ventures that yeah. he had, and they were all cons. Yeah. They were all cons. They were all it was cons. Like, you know, oh, one of the benefits that you're going to have, one of the benefits that we're going to give you for participating in this business is tickets to the Met Gala. And they were like, there are no tickets yeah, to the Met Gala.
They don't.
So he's yeah. trying to sell people tickets to the Met Gala for $500 a pop. And apparently people were paying for it.
Yeah.
And there were no tickets. So he had been doing this for a while. Yeah. And then even after, so after the Fyre Festival failed and he did all this fraud and he got arrested, he got charged for fraud. He was going to be sentenced, but he got out on a $300,000 bail.
Yeah.
And then after he got out on bail, he went and did another scam.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and it's like, for him to have only gotten 6 years is ridiculous because he had a problem. Like, this was an addiction for him, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, how you get out of jail, yeah, you're out on bail.
I don't think he could stop.
Yeah. You get out on bail and then you're like, you know what? Let me scam some more people while I'm sitting here.
He probably can't stop.
Yeah,
He's gonna keep doing this to people.
Yeah, it says he scammed like people out of a couple hundred thousand while he was out on bail. And then that's when they were like, you know what? This kid is he can't. So also I think that it's a nice way to think about millennials and the state yeah. of our generation, you know, yeah. and what our issues are, how, if they can be remedied, what the issues with social media are, you know, because I'm thinking about like events that I go to, right? So if I find an event, like say on Eventbrite or something like mm-hmm. that, or I see a flyer about an event on Instagram, I'm not doing investigative. Now, if I was spending $25,000 on a ticket, I might do some more investigative work. But generally, I'm not doing investigative work. I just see it. It seems cool.
And you believe it.
Yeah. I automatically yeah. just believe it because it's like, why would somebody lie about this? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
There is no, like, I can't really recall a time where I thought, oh, this might not be legit.
Yeah, yeah, you know? This might not be a real festival.
Yeah, yeah, I just kind of assume and then go with it. Buy tickets, show up, hope for the best. Now, I know that I take a risk that it might not be as amazing as I planned, but I don't consider that it will be a total lie.
Yeah.
You know, so, because one of the things was that they were making videos and taking pictures and posting. Basically, it was like a million-dollar Bow Wow challenge. Mm-hmm. Like, they were taking pictures and saying, oh, yeah, we got luxury villas. They got yeah. AC. You know, you're going to have all this gourmet food and all of that, and we're going to have all these major artists, and there was nothing there. Like, they had what they slapped together were, like, leftover FEMA tents
yeah.
from some hurricane that yeah. were left on the island.
And then bread and a piece of cheese.
Yeah. Cheese sandwiches.
Yeah.
And not even grilled cheese.
No.
Just cold
just cheese. Yeah. And I don't think enough
cheese.
For everyone. Yeah. I think they were saying that, you know, people were like hoarding like
yeah.
mattresses.
Like Hunger Games. Yeah.
And tissue. Toilet paper. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. So it was just like, you know, it was terrible. But I don't go into things, even after this has happened, like I've gone to events and I don't go into things assuming that they're going to be lies.
Yeah, no. And you know, I guess technically we're part of the millennial generation, and I think the people putting stuff together are also kind of part of that cohort.
Yeah.
And so I think in the documentary that I watched on Netflix, it was just kind of a lot of times on the internet I see a lot of jokes, like we're the butt of the jokes. Millennials
yeah.
are the butt
yeah.
of jokes of like, oh gosh, we love avocado toast and we're
yeah.
broke and we're dumb and we're
in debt.
Yeah, and we're in debt. And it's, you know, and I think that a lot of times I'm like, well, it's not our fault. You know, we didn't set up the economy this way. It's
yeah.
a lot of years of other cohorts taking yeah. advantage, leaving us with a shitty environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but in this instance, it's like, I think that our reliance on like we look at social media and we take that as truth,
yeah,
has really led us to be vulnerable to these type of scams where we will see a famous person saying like, hey, this is going to be cool, and we're like, oh well, then if she's doing it, then I want to do it, and I'm willing to spend $3,000 on a ticket because I want to live like this celebrity who says that she's going to go, and I'm not going to, you know, even if there's all these red flags of they're not showing me pictures of what this looks like, they're telling me to DM them on Instagram instead of calling a corporate office. No one's responding to my phone calls, but I'm still gonna go.
I fly out tomorrow, but I don't even have my flight information.
And I'm still gonna go. And so I think that is, you know, that was just kind of like a fair criticism and critique of our cohort and our generation of how social media and our reliance on it has really allowed, and you know, this illusion that what we see is real has allowed us to be easily misled. And it was kind of scary to be like, wow, and I think even for a long time, anything I saw on Instagram was like truth to me. So it was like, oh, this is what it must be because this is how it is. And I didn't realize, oh, there are people whose job are all day to come up with ways to make it seem like their life is, they just woke up like this. So I thought like that was, you know, that was really interesting, an interesting aspect of the documentary that I really thought was like more in depth. Like I wasn't expecting for them to hit on so many things, and one of the things was like the millennial thing, and I think it was fair. They definitely presented us as like in a way that it was like, well, how did this party that never happened, how was this able to happen? And it's like, well, that's why.
And it's crazy how, I mean, this man was able to scam people out of, you know, $25 million using Instagram. That was it. That was it. I feel like that's how he had planned the whole festival, via Instagram. Like, even he was DMing people.
I think there was even, in the necklace they said, it was like Instagram in real life. Like, that's what people thought. People thought this music festival was going to be Instagram. Instagram in person.
And he, you know, I think that it gives validity to Donald Trump's, like, whole hashtag fake news, you know, movement. Because I think that, you know, social media kind of lifts the veil a little bit and makes millennials think that they are closer to celebrities than they are. Know, and it's like, oh, I trust this person because I follow them.
I see her every
day. Like, it's like, she's my friend. She wouldn't lie to me. You know, and it's like, no, she would lie to you because she got paid $250,000 to lie to you.
And, you know, before we weren't aware of that.
It was like this whole, like, you know, Kylie Jenner will not, or not Kylie, Kendall Jenner will not mislead me. You know, and I thought it was really interesting that following the festival, you have these influencers come. I think that the influencers were also sued or something like that.
They got
named in a lawsuit. And then they're coming out and saying, you know, I thought that this was legit. I would never do this to my fans. I love you guys.
Which I kind of believe.
Really?
I mean, I believe that they weren't aware that this was I don't think that they really give a shit.
I think it's, you know, kind of like the, like everybody, like all the media teams and stuff like that that were involved in promoting this, right? They said that there was a complete division between the marketing team and the actual planning team. So they did, the marketing team were just marketing what they were told to market. They didn't know what was actually going on the ground. So they didn't know if the villas, the pictures of the villas that they were being sent and told to broadcast were actually villas that existed, and they weren't.
They didn't exist.
But it's like, you know, it's ignorance is bliss, right? Like, you felt like something was off. Like, in the vibe, you know, in the culture, like, people were stressed, you ask questions, they don't have answers, you know, they're scrambling in the last month, so you can see that things are not together, but you don't want to press, you don't want to ask too much, because it's like, do you want to know? Do you want to be accountable? And so, it's like, even though I do feel bad for them and him, you know, putting $250,000, putting them $250,000 over on their credit card and things like this. It's like, well, you didn't want to ask questions. You had the ability. You had, you know, you had, he was within reach for you.
Yeah.
You know, and you chose not to ask. And I think that they also, like, they weren't named in the lawsuit. So they kind of, those people kind of got off scot-free. Even okay. though they were responsible for promoting it and for marketing it. Like, they're kind of like, well, I was just doing my job. But, yeah, I think it's like, this kind of, I hope that they make, it would be cool if they made, like, a real-life, like, dramatized movie out of this one day.
I could see that.
Yeah, I could totally see that. And I think it would be really interesting to watch because I watch a lot of those, like, you know, the movie about, like, the McDonald's guy, the movie, the Wall Street guys, the housing market guys, where it's, like, you know, even old guy with Apple. You see like all these movies come out about how these entrepreneurs, these like big wig entrepreneurs, you know, went through a lot of what could look like fraud to get to where they are. And it just so happened that for them it worked out. You know, it's like, yeah, I was doing a lot of stuff that, you know, was, you know, it was on the fence in terms of more like ethics. You know, is this ethical? But because the company works out, we don't care. Even Facebook, it's like, you know, all the people that these guys shit on to get where they are and to get the money that, you know, it looks a lot like this McFarlane kid. I mean, not totally. Like, I think he went into it like, oh, I'm gonna BS my way through this.
Yeah.
But as far as like doing the people nearest to you dirty and making all these promises that you can't keep, like all of these businesses kind of look alike in that way.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes me question, like, can you have a moral compass when you're going into big business,
or when your business is based on illusion? Like, it's all about like, we're going to give you this. The whole fire festival was you can feel and be a part of this party with all these like influencers or people, just like they're your friends.
Yeah, so there's no hierarchy anymore. It's kind of like mimicking the whole Coachella thing, because Coachella doesn't have like VIP technically. I mean, they have villas and stuff, and you know, the villas are super expensive, so you gotta have money to be able to pay for it. But the whole idea was supposed to be that, you know, we're all in the same playing field.
Technically, like, you're in the same festival as these famous
people. Yeah, and they're not off to the side in some roped off cabana area. Like, you know, Rihanna, even if she does have a beanie covering her face, could walk right past you.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that it's interesting what they're trying to achieve. But it's like, we have to present these influencers as above you in order to get you here in the first place.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's pretty interesting because it's like, if looking at him, like, anybody could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody can pay an influencer $200,000. I mean, not anybody, but you know, if you can get the money, if you can raise the money or something, which what he did is like sell tickets first based on fake promises and then pay people and then double back.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't suggest that, but it, you know, it makes, I think it levels the playing field in terms of who has the capacity to make money.
Yeah, I think the idea is good. He did have a lot of good ideas of selling people the ability to pretend to be just like them for 2 weekends, especially to a generation of people who love music festivals in an island.
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's
great. It's like exclusive.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think like, and even his whole like, bracelets that you can just put your money on these bracelets and they just scan it, and that's how you pay for things. That's a really good idea, so you don't have to worry about bringing cash or bringing your credit cards, and you just wear this band. And
apparently he got I guess in total $100,000 or $800,000 on those wristbands.
That's crazy.
That, like, you know, whatever happened to that money?
Yeah,
because the festival didn't happen, so there was nothing to spend money on.
Yeah,
but all of this, so $800,000 in their system,
just
disappeared.
Yeah, like, no, it's it's just like, it had to be made in a documentary for you to see the depth of it.
Yeah.
And then I think that for me, like, the saddest thing was the exploitation of the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. That's already been exploited by Americans, by the tourists. I mean, And it's like, you know, two coins, because on the one side, that's what they need. They need Americans to come in to be able to sell them, you know, the vacation.
Yeah.
But on the other side, they come in and they exploit their country and take advantage of their labor and then just leave and, you know, don't look back. So, like all these kids, these young adults who were taken advantage of, like, that's pretty shitty. But also this illusion selling to the Bahamas that Americans always do of, well, we're going to bring you lots of money and these people are going to come in here.
Your tourist dollars.
And it went up to, like, the ministry of whatever. Like, these government officials were also lied to and were like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great for our country.
Yeah.
It was on newspapers. Like, people were super excited.
They were owed millions.
Yeah, like, and that's what makes me sad, to be like, man, so this country, this whole country was negatively impacted by this. This festival.
Yeah.
And so we're not just talking about people who were going to look for 2 weekends of vacation. These are people who, like, probably were like,
depending.
Yeah, we're going to be able to long term make a lot of profits for my families, or you know, the day laborers who are like, oh yes, this is perfect, like, I'm gonna be paid for this job.
And then, but not only did they not get paid, because, like, so this was so poorly planned that he was trying to build housing for people 3 weeks before the festival started. So they did not start construction on housing until 3 weeks prior. And so it's like, you have, you know, 500-600 people coming and you have nowhere for them to sleep 3 weeks before. So he was having the day laborers work like 18-19 hour days.
Crazy amount of time.
18-19 hour days to get this built, and paying them for the labor after. So for 3 solid weeks working 19 hour days. And during that time, that means that they're not doing any other work.
Yeah.
So it's like, not only am I not getting paid for the work that I did, but I'm also during this time not bringing any money home,
because I'm
expecting that I'm going to get paid after this.
Yeah.
And so who knows what the long-term residual effects of that were.
That's
and then
true.
I'm sure that the festival people did not clean up after themselves.
No.
So then you have the Bahamian people that a lot of that shit is probably still out there. Because it's like, who... they gotta find people to pay to go and clean all that stuff up.
Yeah.
Like, no, they can't. So, yeah, it was just a really terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I feel like a lot of people have laughed at it, and they're like, yeah, you know, F these spoiled kids, like, they get what they deserve and all of that. But it's like, no, look at how all of these other people were affected as well.
Yeah.
We cannot take that for granted.
And then the last thing is, like, how random was it that Ja Rule was in this?
Oh, my God.
It was just kind of like, the way they were hyping it, they were like, yeah, we got Ja Rule.
I didn't even know that people cared about Ja Rule.
And I was just kind of like, did you get that much money really based on Ja Rule? Like,
I don't know.
So, and I thought, and then I also thought it was fucked up of him to be like, in that there's a scene where he's like, we just can't, you know, we just can't accept, we just can't, people were like, we need to apologize, we need to say, like, be honest about it. And Ja Rule was like, no, like,
yeah, they said, oh, this, you need to tell, because it was when they were going to send out some release about it being fraud and apologize for it being fraud. And he's like, oh, I wouldn't say it's fraud. I wouldn't call it that. I would say that, you know, what did you say? It was false advertising.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
False advertising?
Yeah, I didn't
but
like
you
that.
Did you in you intentionally false advertised. So it was like, you know, one thing that I was talking about is I compared it to, granted, you know, this is on a much smaller scale, but like those online wedding dress companies, right? So they tell you, like, oh yeah, we can make you a couture style wedding dress. Yeah. For a fraction of the cost. So these couture dresses are like, you know, $9, $10, $11, whatever, thousands of dollars, like $10,000. So they're like, oh, we can make it for you for less than $1,000. You pay them your $1,000, they ship you a dress that looks nothing like it.
Yeah.
Nothing. And it's not, it's like, no, that's not false advertising. That's a scam.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you had no, there's, these two dresses don't look anything alike.
Yeah.
That's like so visually different. Like, that wasn't a mistake. That wasn't an accident. That wasn't a slip-up.
Show us real pictures instead of just,
exactly.
Like,
there's a reason why you're manipulating your consumer. You're showing me these pictures that you know the dress is going to look nothing alike. If you had confidence in this product, you would just show me the picture of what the dress looks like.
Yeah, and then I could be like, fine.
Yeah.
I'll spend I could buy it or not. On that. Yeah.
But it's like, no, there's intent. There is manipulative intent in showing me something that is not going to be what it is. Yeah. Like, period. You know, and I think that that's an important piece that people are not talking. It's like, if you have confidence in the fact that this product is legit and it warrants whatever cost. So don't show me the villa, right? Show me the FEMA tent and tell me that this is $25,000. And if I want to pay for it, then I will. If I don't, then I don't.
Yeah.
But you want to trick me out of my money. So you're going to present me something that you know that I'd be willing to pay for.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you spend the money before you give the service.
Yeah.
It's a bad model.
Yeah,
so is. That, I mean, that was bad business, but also fraud.
Yes.
So I think, to sum it up, I'd be like, Fire was bad business, but it was also fraud.
Yeah.
So it was both.
Yeah, yeah.
There are some things that are bad business.
Yeah.
Like, I went to a festival that had... there was a rainstorm and it was outside.
Yeah.
And they didn't have any adequate, you know, they didn't set it up for it to have rain.
Yeah.
So we left that in the middle of the night. We left because we were like, oh my gosh, it's terrible. It was muddy. You had to stand outside in the rain, and if you wanted to hear the show, a lot of the vendors didn't come because they were like, we're not going to stand outside in the rain, and it turned out to be a really shitty festival.
Yeah.
But that's bad business.
Yeah.
But I don't think they intentionally were
they just didn't plan. They probably didn't check the weather.
And so I was like, okay, that's on me. I should have also, you know, checked the weather too and been like, I don't know if this is going to be, or I'm going to bring a tent that's better prepared for this rain, or I'm going to bring rain boots, or I'm going to know, like, okay, is it worth these $50 to be able to do this festival, or should I just stay home? So that was bad business, but this is a combination of bad business and fraud.
Yeah, they were trying to compare it to like Woodstock, like when that riot and those fires broke out. But it's like, even that, I don't even know if I would call that bad business. That was like the attendees that lost it, you know. And it's like, you can't, I mean, I guess you could have more security, but you can only have so much security. You can't have 1-to-1 ratios. So if you're having thousands of people and you have 100 security guards, like, they can do what they can, but, you know, that's an accident. That's unforeseen circumstance.
Yeah.
So when they released the newsletter saying, oh, due to conditions beyond our control, no, it was within your control.
Yeah, and you tried to slap something together
in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, no, I think it was... Initially, I feel like it was probably, which I think is something that's also characteristic of millennials, right? It's like, I wonder if I could do this.
Yeah.
Like, nah, you can't do this. Like, I bet you I could do this. Yeah. I'm going to throw up this website. And then it's like, oh, shit, people are actually buying tickets.
Yeah.
Now we have to put something together.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, go watch the Fyre Fest.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. Even if you don't give a fuck about this festival, it will make you care and make you, like, really just... I don't know. It speaks to... It's more than just a festival.
Yeah. It's about also, like, human nature, you know? Yeah. And, like our generation, you know? It's interesting to see the way that... Because I guess, you know, we're millennials.
Yeah.
And so to see that... There are also differences in millennials. Like, we aren't a monolithic group, right?
Yeah,
so there's us, and then there's millennials that have hella disposable income or trust fund kids or whatever that can afford to do shit, like, can afford to make these kinds of mistakes.
Yeah.
And so we're definitely not a monolith.
Yeah, and then I think the ultimate millennial thing was like, bitch, I'm going to sue you.
Yeah.
And so I was
I mean, it's like, you know, I could totally, if this were not this festival, but if this were like, you know, a festival that I could afford, I could see myself being out there.
Yeah.
You know, and I was talking, and then like, I was talking to my partner, and I'm like, what would we do if we were out there? And it's like, I would just cry. Because, like, what can you do?
Yeah, my partner would be the person taking all the toilet paper and putting it in our tents.
It's like, yes, survival mode. Yeah. Yeah, because it's like, I may not be at this festival, but I could see other situations where, you know, somebody says that they can, that they're going to do something and then they don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, even right now, like, I'm planning a wedding, right? And so thinking about destination weddings, like, there's a lot of stuff that you don't get to see.
Yeah,
you just believe hopeful.
It on what you see in the website.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're sending them money hoping that... Yeah, like basically you're sending money in payments, hoping that when you get there 3 days before your wedding, it's together.
That's true.
And you could get there and it could not be together.
And you're fucked because the event is still happening.
Yeah, you have your people flying in. Like I could be in this, people could be in this exact situation and we take it for granted. Yeah. We think, oh no, like be hella dismissive. That's a millennials. Like F those spoiled kids. No, there are plenty of situations where you could be in the exact same circumstance.
Yeah.
You know?
No, yeah, I think that's true. And this documentary highlights that and makes you think about it.
Yeah. It's like, we need to find... Because the internet generation is so irritating to me. Yeah. Like, we... And this is the last thing that I'll say. Like, we were traveling last year, and we were in Europe, and there's an airline that operates entirely online. Like, you cannot talk on the phone to someone.
Mm, what is it?
It's Norwegian. Norwegian. Oh, okay. Like, you cannot call someone. You have to... you have to send like an email or do live chat or tweet them. Literally, that's the only way to get in touch with them. And so we had missed our flight. We're at the Norwegian help desk at the airport and we're like, hey, like we need to try to get on another flight. And it's like, oh, we can't do anything. That's the corporate office. But in order to get in touch with the corporate office, you have to email them. So it's like, we need an answer right now.
Yeah.
Like we don't have time to wait for an email. It's ridiculous, but these are the times.
Yeah.
These
are the, and I bet you someone was like, this is a great idea.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay people. Yeah. And the convenience of just online and everything's online now.
You don't need a call center. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like what if there's some kind of cyber attack and then we can't, and then Twitter goes down.
Or
then
the power,
what?
Yeah.
How many companies would just like be completely wiped off the map because of Twitter?
Yeah.
If Twitter just evaporated tomorrow. You know,
it's
ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But yeah, hopefully y'all enjoyed that discussion.
Yeah,
thanks for listening to us rant about the Fyre Festival. Watch it.
Yeah, if you guys ever see anything on Netflix or on something on Hulu or whatever that you feel like we should talk about, you know, send us that as well. As always, you can email us at woke.ishpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us DMs at our Instagram, wokeishpodcast. You can also leave it as a comment. And then follow us on Twitter. What's our Twitter?
Woke-ish talk.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully you enjoyed our breakdown of the Fyre documentary. Hopefully we inspired you to watch it. It's really worth your time. I learned a lot about it, and I had even known about it before.
Yeah.
And so it's really great. Thank you for listening, and until next time.
Bye.